morning, members. Call the meeting of the House Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division to order. We'll begin with the discussion of the minutes. Representative Rarick moves to approve the minutes of February 8th, 2017. Are there any? Oh, he wasn't.
It looked right, though.
Yeah, we don't have rules here. Is there any discussion, additions or corrections to minutes as presented? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of Representative Rarick's motion to approve the minutes of February 8th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Those minutes are adopted as presented. Members, today is the state general tax day. We are going to repeal the entire general tax multiple times. And so looking forward to the discussion. And to lead that off, members, we are going to begin with a presentation on House File 12 from Representative Lewick, who will kick it off from the 40-yard line. And then I know Mr. Cummings will want to present after Representative Lewick in his presentation, because he needs to head to the Senate in order to present over there today. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lewick. And Representative Lewick has a delete everything amendment. Representative Whalen moves that House File 12 be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, I think Representative Whalen also would like to move the DE1 amendment to Representative Lewick's bill. Discussion on the motion to amend the House File 12 with the DE1 amendment. Hearing none, all in favor of Representative Whalen's motion to amend the House File 12 with the DE1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. That motion is adopted. And members and Representative Lewick, the DE1 amendment is before us. Welcome, Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. House File 12, as amended, was developed to reduce the state general tax significantly and readjust both the commercial property taxpayer and the seasonal rec taxpayers to sort of reallocate what is left of that that tax levy. Basically does two things. They said it would substantially relieve the heavy burden that the state general tax places on our business sector and also on our seasonal rec property. First, it would remove the annual inflator, so it would stop growing. This thing is almost roughly doubled since its inception because there's an annual inflation calculation made. And second, it would reset the general tax levy back to roughly what it was when this was brought into form, which would bring us back to about $629 million tax levy. The third part of that would be from here on after the legislature would have to levy that tax if they want to change it every year, like the rest of the county and city councils do out there. If you're going to raise it, you got to vote on it. So that provides a general tax reduction for all the people that are subject to that tax. And there is a revenue note that the Revenue Department has provided on that. The second part of that bill would also readjust, reapportion who pays. And in the process of doing that, it would put in a $500,000 market value exclusion for the commercial property. So basically businesses with anything less than that, when they calculate the tax bill, it would be zero as soon as you go over the $500,000 market value, then it would kick in. That would also be in place at $50,000 market value for the seasonal rec. This doesn't eliminate it. I certainly share Chair Draskowski's interest in actually ultimately eliminating this. This basically turns the clock back to roughly when it was put in place, and it also would reapportion the amounts that the various entities have to pay, taking a huge burden off the smaller businesses. So, and as a matter of note, I'm a co-author on all the bills before you today. I'm ready to work on whatever we can do to get some rails around this general tax. It's certainly hurting small businesses, particularly in my district. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. So, Representative Lewick, so what this would mean is, you kick it back to the original level when the general tax was first brought, and then the two exclusions, which exclude the bottom part of both the seasonal rec and the C&I, suggest that those remaining with general tax exposure would not have an increase from where they are today. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That and any further attempts to raise it would have to be done consciously. That inflator is really a dangerous thing. I believe it allows us as legislators to kind of just let it go. In this case, if you're going to change it thereafter, you literally have to reset that levy. And that's important that our local units of government have to do that every year. So I would hope that would be a strong incentive to at least leave it alone and not raise it in the future.
Thank you. Members' questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Gruskowski. Was this in the tax bill last year, Chair?
It was. We had a different version than this, but we had
something similar.
We had the full repeal in the original tax bill in 2015, and then the final conference committee report included the HRTAS approach, which I think we ended up with $100,000 of exclusion.
Yes, we did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Hines.
Mr. Hines, or excuse me, Representative.
This is playing devil's advocate to a certain extent, but if cabin owners were to enjoy this either $50,000 exemption or a straight out repeal of having to pay statewide business property tax, what would the opposite then if there were a move to put the operating levy back on that property? Have you done an analysis to see if that's a wash or if that's detrimental? I mean, I've never seen a comparison between the two since this was enacted, and I did serve here when this became law. This was a Senator Polk-Miller provision that ended up in conference committee. But I can't remember what the comparison was between having cabin owners pay operating or pay this.
Mr. Haynes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we have looked at that, or I have looked at that a number of times over the years, and my sense is the last time we looked at it, it was still close to a wash, that sort of generally held somewhat maybe ironic or coincidentally, but yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hines.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Other questions, members? Comments? While we have a law here, Mr. Cummings, if you want to come up, and I'm sure members will have more questions during or after Mr. Cummings' presentation.
Unless there's any further questions, could I be excused, Mr. Chair? I've got another committee.
You're relieved from duty, sir.
We're keeping a good eye on the DNR.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Welcome, Mr. Cummings.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. First, wanted to state that these comments are not directed towards Representative Lewick's bill or other bills in specific. It is a general testimony. I also wanted to thank the Chair. I know I'm trying to ensure this committee is scheduled at the same time as the Senate Tax Committee, so sometimes I feel a little torn to be at two places at once. So I appreciate your deference, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith support a balanced, common-sense approach to tax cuts that prioritizes economic opportunity for Minnesota families while protecting the state's long-term fiscal health. This year, Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith have proposed cutting taxes for more than 450,000 Minnesota families to help build an economy that works for everyone, everywhere in Minnesota, and have recommended targeted and reasonable reforms to elements of our tax code that need to be updated to keep pace with changing practices in our economy. Bills to repeal or phase out the state general levy, that some of which are heard before this committee today, could put the state's long-term fiscal health at risk. Eliminating the state general levy and taxes payable in 2018 would cost nearly $1.4 billion in the 2018-19 biennium. In the next biennium, it would cost nearly $1.9 billion, well above the available balance. While removing the inflator would cost $12 million in fiscal year 2018, that cost would increase to $247 million in 2027. The state general levy has grown less rapidly as compared to local property taxes on homeowners and businesses. Since 2002, local government levies have doubled, $4.1 billion in 2002 to $8.3 billion in 2016. The state levy increased 47% over the same time, $588 million to $863 million. In fact, in 9 of the last 15 years, the state general levy property tax rates have decreased year over year. We look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, and members throughout this session on developing a balanced package for Minnesota families and businesses while providing a steady approach to the state's long-term fiscal health. So as these bills move through the process, Mr. Chair, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you, the authors, members, and staff, and we thank you for the opportunity to be a resource today.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings, and look forward to that discussion as well. And just one quick observation, Mr. Cummings, and I've been kind of making observations in all committees as the government comes before us to talk, and that is the discussion seems to be when we're talking about collecting less of the people's money to the people in government, it seems to be a cost. But when we're going to take the money and spend it, it's an investment. So I find that kind of amusing. But so thank you for continuing the trend, Mr. Cummings.
If you're chair.
No, come back, Mr. Cummings.
Well, Mr. Chair, as I mentioned, the governor is Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith has provided an approach to a balanced package that prioritizes both investments in our future in education and health care and economic development, as well as providing tax cuts to 450,000 Minnesotans. I would agree with you, Mr. Chair. We do look forward to working with you on developing a package that can be signed this year. And Mr. Chair, as I mentioned to you before the committee, we have two tax bills signed already this year. So I think that there is an optimism that maybe we can keep that train moving. So
thank you, Mr. Cummings, for your consistency, and good luck on efforts in the Senate to pass that $4 billion tax cut bill.
Have a good morning, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Representative Loftwood, do you have a question for Mr. Cummings before he heads up?
No, just a comment.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to reemphasize what Mr. Cummings said at the end, which is that this inflation factor for the statewide general levy has been a really huge benefit to the business community, and one that I suspect homeowners in every corner of the state wish that they'd had, in that the state general levy rose dramatically less than the local levy percentage over the period of time since this was enacted. And just last year, in 2016, overall, the state general levy went up 1.3%, but the local levies went up 4.9%. So your average homeowner was paying five times as much in inflation to local government in their property tax bill than the commercial industrial through the statewide levy. And if you look back in the last 4 years, local levies grew 12.3%, and the state levy grew 5.3%. So that's a pretty good deal for people who are paying commercial industrial taxes. And as I understand it, this was put in place in part to as part of a refinancing of school levies to contribute money into the state general fund to relieve school districts from property taxes. And while it did put a new levy on businesses, it's
significantly, it was still significantly less in their overall tax burden than if we'd stayed with the old system. So I think this is actually, over time, given our commercial industrial properties, a pretty good deal, particularly with the inflation measure that's put in here. And I think we need to acknowledge that as we debate all these different approaches.
Representative Loeffler, do we know how much a commercial industrial went up on the local side?
Well, it would have been that same local levy amount, because the same levy is applied to all classes of property by the cities, the counties, and the school districts. So that would have been the same levy increase that a homeowner or, you know, any other property type would have paid. That difference is really about the CI state levy having a different measure of growth and not being subjected to any kind of local government needs. Where the local levy is set by the local elected officials based on, you know, whether or not we step up with local government aid, whether or not, you know, some major piece of infrastructure needs to be replaced, whether or not the school district gets additional families, you know, all those other sort of factors that affect the local levy. The statewide commercial industrial levy isn't subjected to that. It's set in statute.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler. I just, for the benefit of the folks in the audience here, I just want to make sure that they don't misconstrue or misunderstand your statement. You know, the commercial industrial property pays all of the taxes that any of those other classes you mentioned already pay, and they're subjected to the higher rate of inflation or higher rate of growth with those levies. This tax is a tax that's above and beyond all of that, and is really bad policy and a burden to all of the small businesses in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler.
Since my name was mentioned, and just in response, you're absolutely right, Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, that they do pay that, but they would have gotten a ginormous property tax reduction in 2001 if it hadn't been for this, is my understanding, because the class rates were reduced dramatically at that time. And so that the business community at that time thought this was a better deal, is my understanding.
Well, members, we don't have any rules in this committee, but I think ginormous should be adopted into something. So, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and this is a good discussion. I think just to kind of put things into context and off of what has kind of been mentioned here, is that in going back to 2002 when this general-wide levy was put into place.
Temporary
tax. Yes, could be. there's quite a bit of rate compression at the time. In fact, I went back and looked in for payable 97, for commercial, the classification rate was 4.6%. And then in 01, it was 3.4, and then in the tax bill of 01, it was lowered to 2.0 for the top tier. And homeowners at one time over 75,000 back in 97 was 2.0, and now it's basically 1.0. So as Representative Loeffler said, there was this huge compression of the rates. And I went back and did some calculating, and if you back in the 01 tax bill, if you took out the general levy, which was $592 million, I think, that first year, so figuring about $560 were to CI, commercial would have seen about a 32% property tax cut, which you can argue whether or not that's good or bad, but the homeowners were seeing a 12% cut. And I know when they were doing all the calculations, you try to make things work. And I know part of this levy was to kind of even things out, because it just, folks thought back then it would have been probably politically tough to go back and say, well, we gave businesses three times the cut of homes. And the same was for seasonal rec. And it's kind of when we go here, and if you take away the tax on the CI tax that the seasonal get, at that time they would have saw a 24% cut. And again, which would have been about twice of what the homeowner had. And so when we exempted them off the operating referendum, there was some problems there kind of politically on that. And even still with that, when all was said and done, seasonal rec saw about a 1% decrease, and CI saw probably about a 3.5% decrease once the levy was put back on, and homeowners saw 12%. But the last thing I kind of want to make here is when you kind of look at a need for property tax relief, since 2002, the homeowners' taxes have doubled from about $1.9 billion to $3.8 billion on residential homesteads. On seasonal rec, it's more than doubled from about $123 million to $268. And on farmland, as you know, it's tripled since 2002 from about $212 million statewide to $686. So you've got double, double, and triple. And on business taxes, it's gone from about $1.7 billion to about $2.75, which is about a 63% increase. So should we have property tax relief for commercial industrial? Absolutely. But I would argue here, and I know this is, we're just dealing with CI today, and when all is said and done, there will be a package of property tax cuts, I hope. But, I mean, I'm hoping we're not losing sight here, and as our priorities, because I think our priorities should be homeowners and farmers. And I know you've been a strong supporter, you know, of the ag property tax credit. But I know this is going to be part of a larger picture, but I hope when the final bill comes out, it's not disproportionate like the 2015 tax bill was, when you had this huge relief to CI, and at that time not a dime to homeowners. So I'm hoping there's a better balance, and I just bring this up to kind of focus the committee's attention to where we've really seen these property tax increases, where I think the relief should go first.
Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt, I always appreciate your institutional knowledge of being a senior member, really, in the tax committee, and rapidly, just a few of us are becoming senior members as well with the turnover of the legislature. But a couple of things about your point. You know, farmland, they quit making, I don't know, probably a gazillion years ago. Right? We have no rule, right?
Ginormous
years ago. But during the same time that you mentioned, and as a member of the home building industry, we added a lot of value. A lot of homes were built. In the metro area alone, nearly 22,000 homes per year. So we've added a lot of value. And if some of your statistics are showing how much more of the pie residences are paying as a whole rather than individually, that certainly is part of that number. And so I just wanted to, make deference to that. The other thing with regard to CI property and the relief that they got, even today, although commercial industrial only represents about 12% of the property tax base, it's still paying an inordinately and disproportionate share of all of the property taxes that are paid. So, if we're trying to get parity, we'd really like that. I would really like that. But how do we compress 55 classes of property and how we've got to the mess we're at? But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. And members, we need to keep moving here. We do have some testifiers when we get through all these bills. With Representative Whalen renewing her motion that House File 12 be laid over for possible inclusion, the chair lays over House File 12 for possible inclusion. Representative Peterson. Representative Lunan moves House File 484 to be entertained by the committee and then to be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill you have before you is House File 484, and that basically will freeze the inflator on commercial industrial properties as well as seasonal. However, I do want to make a few comments. Unlike homeowners, businesses pay a statewide business general property tax, which represents about 30% mm-hmm. of their total tax bill. And all businesses pay this fixed cost, whether they own the property, they lease the property in all locations, and regardless of whether they have a profit or a loss. Nearly all commercial leases are structured to pass through the actual property tax and to pay their proportionate share. So whether they go up or they go down, they also benefit if they go down, but they also pay more if they go up. And this significantly affects small businesses that happen to be like in a strip mall, for example. So I have a tenant, and going back, I've been in commercial real estate since 1990. I've been paying the statewide business property tax since it came into place, and I've been paying commercial taxes since 1987. And I'm a commercial realtor with a CCIM designation. So this is a very near and dear issue to me. But to give an example, a chiropractor who has about 1,500 square feet, which is about half the size of this room, pays $15,000 a year in property taxes. That is a lot of money. And any dollar that goes into property tax, they do not have money to put into rent or put into their pocket or to pay their bills or whatever. And you might find it also interesting to know that one of the largest investors in investment commercial real estate are our pensions across the country. They're in REITs, real estate investment trusts, or they're just other investments. So the point is here, people, is that we're all connected in one way or another. We all benefit when all boats rise, or we all get hurt when someone else takes the hit. And having this kind of a burden on our businesses affects all of us. And I just want to make sure that you know that also the Minnesota Center of Fiscal Excellence cites that the general property tax has significant implications on Minnesota's competitiveness. As you know, a few years ago, the legislature added an automatic inflator. In essence, this tax is on autopilot. It will go up every year regardless of legislative action. And this is a dangerous policy to let any tax go unchecked without any accountability by the legislature. I also want you to think back to the 1970s when we had inflation rates in the double digits. And I think that is a very unfair way to not hold any accountability here when we are putting this burden on across our, in this case, both seasonal rec properties and commercial real estate. But I'm focusing mostly on the commercial real estate side. So this is a really regressive tax, and at the very least, this inflator should be eliminated. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Members, questions for the author? Representative Peterson, I think we're going to probably mow through these last few bills here. Thank you for bringing your bill. Excellent comments. With that, Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 484 be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, the chair does lay over House File 484. Representative Kurtos? Representative McDonald's not here, so Representative Hurtas will bring his bill. Representative Barr moves House File, that House File 211 be entertained by the committee and then laid over for possible inclusion. I guess you could have moved your own, Representative Hurtas, but Representative Barr moved it for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity once again to talk about the state general levy, which I think I started this discussion in 2015, and we've been hoping for a tax bill for the last couple of years. All of the bills that we're listening to today are great bills, which really help to address a systemic problem with having this added burden of property tax on our small businesses. And it's important to know that, especially in rural areas, that this tax makes rural businesses the number two highest taxed business property in the nation. When you add it into the metro area, it's about the sixth highest. It's also, as I mentioned earlier, behind the table that although it only represents about 12% of the total tax capacity, it's currently paying more than 30% of all of the property taxes that are generated. The basic average property tax that a small business pays is about $3,744 per property. There's about 122,000 commercial industrial properties in the state, and 80% of those properties are valued at under $500,000. So what that means is 80% of 122 is roughly 100,000. And of that value, about 50% of those properties are distributed into greater Minnesota, and about half are in the metro area. So the relief in some of these bills that's being offered is very fairly distributed between rural Minnesota and metro area. And with regard to those small businesses, it's important to know that about 88% of those businesses are businesses that have 25 employees or less. So this really is the economic engine of our small business growth, and it was my attempt to certainly provide relief to those small businesses and for anybody who represents a small town, whether it's even on the edge of town in Metro here or whether it's representing Dilworth, Minnesota, for example. This money that's extracted from these small towns is sent to St. Paul for redistribution, and in that manner, if you take that money out, that money is not being spent in your local community, and without a main street, you don't have a town. And so it really is an onerous burden. And so with that, I would just like to make one more comment about the past rhetoric we've heard about the state general levy and that it's big corporate tax breaks. Clearly, this is not big corporate tax breaks. And in the same circumstance where I might use a big corporate tax break just to or tax claim just to make the point, let's just pretend we're talking about the mega mall. And let's say we have a $500,000 exclusion at the mega mall. The Garmazian brothers or whoever the owner of that property is now, they would get a $500,000 exclusion just like any other business property. So most of us have been to the mega mall. Let's take that $3,700 I was talking about and divide that by the three floors that are on there. And that's about $1,200 roughly per floor that property is getting relief. And as Representative Peterson just mentioned, most commercial property, the taxes are passed through to the tenant. So in that scenario, if there were, for example, 100 businesses on each floor at the mega mall, and you divided that $1,200 by 100 businesses, each business is getting $12 of relief. And if it bothers you that Victoria's Secret is a big national company, or The Gap, or any of these other stores, that this is big corporate tax relief, it simply is not. And some of you over here have argued that this was big corporate tax breaks last year on the floor. It is not. It is about helping our smallest businesses lift themselves and to grow their businesses. So with that, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to getting the tax bill this year, and hopefully there will be some form of property tax relief in it. And I will just comment on my bill and my introduction. It's a very scalable tax because it's fully captured. So as Representative Marquardt has said in tax committee as well, it's going to get down to priorities, and it's going to be the tax expenditures that we have. And whether or not you could eliminate nearly $1 billion of property tax in the commercial real estate industry, that certainly would be a goal that I believe in. But because it is so scalable, and what this bill does is just eliminating the first tier or the lowest part, we can adjust that once we have targets. After we get to the February forecast, then we can start to look at what our priorities are and how much we can afford to do. So I think Mr. Hines had a comment, too, on the fiscal note on the first tier was overstated on my bill here, the $150,000 exclusion as introduced here. Has a cost of about $80 million, I think. Mr. Hines, maybe you want to comment on that.
Thank you, Representative Portas. And Mr. Hines, also included in that question, Mr. Hines, can you tell us more about how it's structured? There's a first tier, and then is there a second tier and a third tier, and how does it all structure?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hurtas, with regard to the question about the fiscal note, the fiscal note from the Department of Revenue is correct as the bill is drafted, but the bill itself over-adjusts the state general levy by more than the amount you really need to reduce it to just cover the first tier, and I think this is because the bill was introduced 2 years ago and the same number was picked up. It should have really moved. So the fiscal note tends to say that it's basically a $90 million plus cost per year in the future, and I think that number really could be more like $80 million when we readjust it. And I would have attempted to do an amendment, but it would all change after the February forecast anyway. So I think, as Representative Hurtas is saying, once that number's in, we can start sort of fixating on these numbers better. But just the cost of eliminating the first tier's general levy will be a little less expensive than is shown in this fiscal note. And then with regard to your question, Mr. Chairman, there's just the two tiers for commercial industrial property. The first one, $50,000, is at 1.5%, and over $150,000 at 2%. And the way this bill is structured, it would not really affect the taxes of any value in that over $150,000 tier. So each business would benefit to the same dollar amount in terms of its relief on the first $150,000 of value, but it wouldn't shift any tax onto that upper tier.
Thank you. Other questions for Representative Hertas? Thank you, Representative Hertas. Well, Representative Markworth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas. I do like this as the best of the approaches. I just think, as you said, this helps small businesses the most and then just kind of ratchets up. I mean, I think that's important, and it's geographically balanced. I think it's, when you talk about kind of what we're going to have as a final mix of things, I think this is more in the ballpark, and I know Representative Carlson's working on one that would exempt the first $100,000, which is a little less cost. It just kind of depends on what we have, but I do think this is the approach in any bill that we do. And I, you know, Representative Peterson, she's not here anymore, but she brings up a great point. Farmers and businesses, no matter what your profit or loss is, you have these property taxes you have to pay. So this would have a much greater impact for a small business that has a little less wiggle room than others. So I appreciate you bringing that forward. I'm not going to comment on the total elimination of the CI. I think my comments are, everyone knows those, and I'm not going to, I'll save the committee today on those, but I don't
necessarily. How do you spell Gramazian?
You know, I don't know, but and skyscraper, you know. So I'm not going to do that today, but I do appreciate it. I think this is, and the inflation that Representative Peterson has, I think, is a good approach, too. I just don't, this tends to have more of a set cost for that. Inflation just kind of goes out there, and you know, we've got the budget right now in a pretty good stable position, and I think we really have to be careful about future liabilities as we do things. So thank you, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, members. With that, Representative Barn renews her Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, I agree too. I think this is a realistic approach to this tax, and I support it. I do have a question. In our bill summary, it talks about eliminating that 95%, 5% apportionment. Now, could somebody explain that? I don't quite understand that.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, the way the current law just specifies one number for the state general levy, and then specifies that it be split 95 to 5 between CI and seasonal rec each year. This bill and many of the bills that we hear on the state general levy, because they affect the CI piece differently, we no longer have that 95-5 relationship. And the way I've usually drafted these bills, they just put them into each having their own separate levy, a seasonal rec number and a CI number, so you don't need to have that 95.5 anymore. But it's retaining the amount, the same levels starting out before you adjust for what the bill is trying to do.
Representative Anderson?
Well, just a quick follow-up then. Would this reduction in the commercial industrial property also impact seasonal rec?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it would not. That's part of the idea, that they're isolated.
Thank you. Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, if you eliminated the 95-5 allocation to seasonal recreational, if it were all lumped together, then I believe you would see a pretty significant increase in the state general levy on seasonal recreational property, which would be a tax increase for those. And thank you, Representative Marquardt, for your comments. You know, it was important to note that with regard to the amount of money that was in the bill in terms of its original introduction, when the targets were announced, it was raised, and then it was negotiated down, so that was that scalable portion. But looking at the approach we have, if you took each of the relief that would be on Main Street in small-town Minnesota, you would see a pretty significant economic stimulus in those communities, because whether that restaurant decided to add an outdoor seating area, put in a patio, build a fence, that's all economic activity that would allow, an extra $4,000 to spend on an improvement in a business is a good example of how that would put people to work in a small town. Or it might mean a couple extra part-time teenagers get a job in a restaurant or other business. It's just more capital that's available to grow those businesses. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you. Members, with that, Representative Barr renews her motion, House File 211 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the chair does lay over House File 211. Representative Marquardt, or Representative, excuse me, McDonald, the other M, sorry, Representative Marquardt, and sorry, Representative McDonald. So maybe congratulations to both of you.
Mr. Chair, I'll take that as a compliment to be compared to Representative Marquardt.
Thank you. With that, Representative Erickson moves House File 606 to be entertained by the committee and laid over for possible inclusion. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives, members of the committee. Although Representative Hertaus's bill is a great bill and would do wonders for our community in my county of Wright, I don't think it goes quite far enough. So therefore, I have introduced House File 606 in an effort to have tax relief for families and businesses in the state of Minnesota, and particularly my county of Wright and my main street of my cities in Wright County. This particular bill would phase out the commercial and industrial property tax. The reason for the bill is probably simple. I've heard from many folks in my community, those who are on Main Street, just on the same street of my photo studio and an industrial park, that the cost of doing business is high. We are number two in property tax, commercial industrial property tax, in the nation, in rural, and number seven in the metro, in the nation. Those are not good numbers. Although driving here from Delano to the Capitol this morning, I did hear on the news that Minnesota is in the top 10 states of doing business. Our business climate is very good in the state. I think Utah was number one, Louisiana was the last, Minnesota was in the top 10. I didn't quite hear the number because someone was honking at me because I was driving too slow. But I think we can do better. And here, just think about this for a moment. The commercial industrial property tax for those businesses, they're already paying property tax to their schools. They're helping educate our children. They're paying city tax to help clean the roads, plow them, and make sure that there's fire safety and police. And then they're also paying county tax for the county, for county roads, ditches, bridges, et cetera, et cetera. They're doing their part for God and country, if you will. So the commercial and industrial property tax is a regressive tax. It's another tax on tax on tax that is basically passed on to the consumer. And each and every one of us pays that tax through the commercial and property industrial tax. So therefore, I think it would be a good business practice and good governance if we reduced and eliminated that tax and released that burden on the businesses so they can continue to prosper, and maybe we can become number one in the nation to do business, not number seven. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Any questions for the author? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and since you were amused with my use of the ginormous adjective earlier, I just would like to acknowledge that Representative McDonald, in the fiscal or the revenue note that we have here, has made a ginormous milestone in this committee. We get used to seeing really big numbers in this committee, but if you look at the next biennium, fiscal years 2021, the tax relief that would be provided to just this one type of property would collectively total $1.1 billion. I think that's the first time we've hit a billion in this committee, and I would say that's ginormous and maybe out of proportion to what we've seen for other types of property, but I thought I'd note it.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler, and it's less than a third of a $4 billion tax cut bill that Mr. Cummings is working on in the Senate right now. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. That's a great story, and it just reminds me of the infusion of that $1 billion back into the hands, back into the pockets of the business owners and families, and how much activity, economic activity, that will grow. listen to Representative Hertaus. He's very good in articulating the commonsensical approach of putting monies back into the pockets of families and businesses and how that creates economic activity. We can look to past history to indicate that. For example, our $1.4 billion surplus. So that number doesn't surprise me that it's going to be $1 billion less for the state. No, it's $1 billion more for businesses and families that will create more revenue for them and for the state. So I'm excited by that number. Thank you for sharing that and pointing that out.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Other questions, members? Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know I moved this file, so I have to ask my dear friend, Representative McDonald, why are you leaving out seasonal rec?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, that was a mistake. I did get an email from a resident in Annandale. I represent Annandale and South Haven. There's some lakes.
Lots of lakes.
Yeah, Lake Sylvia, et cetera, a lot of lakes. And they asked that very same thing. I pleaded ignorance. It was a fault. But if you want to have an oral amendment, I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Thank you, Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Other questions, members? With that, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 606 be laid over for possible inclusion. And the chair does lay over House File 606. Representative McDonald.
Very good. Very sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to thank and call out Representative Rarick, who texted me while I was in the long-term health care committee, that my bill was up. So without that, I would not be able to be here today. So thank you, Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Representative
and committee members.
And Representative McDonald, I would just point out that you being a small town Main Street business, if you had an extra $3,700 under my proposal, you'd be able to expand your production studio, your photo studio. And for any of you that don't know what Ms. Representative McDonald can do, all you need to go is to my house website and see how much better he made me look than I really do. So anyway, with that, thank you for your testimony. Representative Chair Daskowski moves his own bill, House File Number 726, for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Chair Daskowski, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House File 726 repeals the state general tax over 6 years. And I had to ask Mr. Rubis, I thought I included the state or the seasonal recreational properties, and he said we did. So this does repeal both the CNI portion and the seasonal rec portion in totality over 6 years. Members, as I think we've had a very good discussion. This is a very oppressive tax on businesses that they are forced to pay to state government on top of those payments that they already make for city, county, school, and or township taxes in their local governments. So what this bill will do is remove that 25% to 35% additional property tax that they pay directly to the state of Minnesota that never touches home in their home territory and their home communities. And members, I really do like, and I, although I would like to repeal the entire thing, and hopefully we can get a $3 or $4 billion tax cut bill, and then there would be room to repeal the full $1.8 billion general tax. Short of that, if we are not, I certainly do appreciate the Hertaus approach, and I just don't know why we have this inflator in this particular tax. We do repeal that inflator in here too, as you would suspect. And anyway, I guess I would stand for questions, Mr. Chair. I'd like to reckon back to the discussion we had on the House floor about the Sunrise Cafe, and I did get a hold of Lori Westerland from Malmo. She's unable to make it today, but hopefully we can get her before the legislature again to talk about not only her Sunrise Cafe, a very small business on Lake Mille Lacs that pays over $4,000 annually to this very oppressive tax that's holding back her business. And I can't remember if it's four her 800 pies that she's got to sell every year just to pay the tax, but I'll have those numbers all ready for the time we get to the House floor, Mr. Chair.
You know, Mr. Chair, when you gave that debate last year on the floor and you were talking about pies, I thought for sure it was Betty's Pie Shop. I was thinking of it in my mind up in the Iron Range area, but so that's in Malacca.
No,
all right.
Melmo.
It's in Melmo, Mr. Chair, and you know, you just found another Sunrise Cafe, and there's thousands of them across Minnesota.
Any questions from members for Chair Drazkowski? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, your use of the 16.7 for each of the reductions on the two different levies is very reasonable, I think, as we move toward that zero mark. You know, for a commercial and industrial and seasonal rec over the period. So you do it very evenly rather than, you know, doing a, here's a, we'll do 50% this year and then we'll do 25 and then we'll divide it up. So I really like this approach. I think it's really common sense and very fair. Thank you.
Thank you.
We also have a question from Representative Barr. Oh, okay. Representative Markworth.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, I thought, brought up a good question. I think, you know, we're talking about seasonal recreational property here, and, you know, there's a lot of school districts or areas that the seasonal rec is off of the operating referendum, which was part of the 2002 bill, and this was kind of put on in exchange. And I do think we need to have more discussion on that. If we shouldn't, you know, take them off the business tax, put them back on the seasonal, or put them back on the operating referendum. I don't know. But it was part of the agreement kind of back then, is if we took one off, put the other one on. Because the problem is if you just take them off the CI tax, you know, just calculating if you were to fully phase this in, it'd be about a 16% cut on seasonal rec property. If you took, it's about $44 million now. And if you don't have that kind of corresponding with homeowners, everything has to be in balance. You're, you know, giving all these seasonal rec property owners this tax relief, and homeowners aren't getting any. For example, someone in Grand Forks, North Dakota, who's at a lake home in Minnesota, would see tax relief, and yet someone in East Grand Forks, a homeowner, wouldn't see any. Likewise, Fargo, Moorhead, and Wapit. Yeah, I mean, you could. So I know there was some debate last session on providing property tax relief for seasonal rec, which, you know, I'm going to say I own a cabin. But I think the senior citizen living down the street from me in Dilworth deserves property tax relief on her home before I get it on my cabin. I mean, I just think that's fair. And so just as we look at all these things that involve seasonal rec, I think we really have to look at the school issue. But we also have to make sure if we have it as part of a package here, we're also providing homeowners with at least as much, if not more, property tax relief. Otherwise, I just think you run into a fairness question. But so that, not a question for you, Representative Drazkowski. Thank you.
Well, I would, Mr. Chair, I would just concur with Representative Markworth. I think that's an issue as we move forward that we need to certainly consider if the seasonal rec portion is going to be part of a package. We need to think about that. The other question, I think it does deserve more discussion, that I thought about with this particular area is, what about their representation in an election or in a referendum? If we do that, should we give them the ability to vote in a potential referendum? Because we run into that with the farm properties already. If you own a farm property in another county, that's one of the reasons that I think we need to get to House Garage and Acre, is because we've got these owners all over who don't get a chance to vote on a referendum on property that they own and a property tax ostensibly on them. So anyway, I agree, Representative Markworth. I think we need to have more discussion about that.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. And Representative Markworth, my recollection about this issue goes back to the 90s as well, and even before the state general levy. There is an association of Minnesota lake and cabin owners. I don't remember an acronym they call themselves, but very active at that time. And for the reasons that Chair Drazkowski has just mentioned, one of the great inequities, some of those areas of the state which were water rich and cabin heavy
and relatively small populations found it quite easy without voter representation to pass or shift a lot of the spending that school districts were doing onto those property owners, and they had no voice in it. So it always opens another Pandora's box and certainly worthy of discussion. With that, folks, we've got plenty of time. Is there anyone else from the audience, business community, or anything that would like to comment on Chair Drazkowski's bill or any other bill? Seeing none, Chair Drazkowski renews his motion to House File 726 to be included for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And with that, members, we have general testimony. All right. So with that, Chair Drazkowski will resume. Okay, I guess we are going to take general testimony, and first up is Beth Cadoon from the Minnesota Chamber. Ms. Cadoon, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I'm here representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm also here representing the United for Jobs Coalition. I did have two handouts in your packets, so I just refer to you to the one that also has on the back page of the 80 associations and local chambers of commerce that are part of the United for Jobs Coalition, which is one of our top priorities, is to reduce this high fixed cost of doing business in the state. And many of the we have a strong support with many of our local chambers, as well as business associations from all, representing all industries of the state, from the grocers, the retailers, the business partnerships, manufacturing, etc. So I'd refer you to that list. As has been discussed, this is a high fixed cost of doing business in the state. We're really focused on those taxes where we are uncompetitive, because we continue to hear from our businesses that the high fixed cost of doing business in the state does undermine their ability to grow and invest in their businesses in the state of Minnesota. So we thank the authors for bringing forth these bills. There's obviously various ways to get at reducing this state levy, so I appreciate the different approaches. I would just want to focus on my comments on a couple items. One is on the competitiveness. As was mentioned, we do rank, unfortunately, amongst the top in the nation on business property tax. I think you have to look at both the state levy as well as the local property tax, as obviously those are added together when you're looking at how businesses compete in this area. As the chart shows, and a lot of people have been talking about the great 50-state property tax study that's done by the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. It's also nationally recognized. The Lincoln Institute is part of this study as well, and really shows how Minnesota businesses compare in this area. Unfortunately, we're not just a little above other states. We're way above other states. If you look at some of our comparisons, we're up to 273% above some of our neighboring states on business property taxes. Just to highlight a few of these items on the chart, this is just showing you the on the commercial side from $1 million properties and looking at the largest cities in each state. Minnesota currently ranks seventh highest, as been mentioned, at $39,000 of property taxes. That's 53% above the national average. If you look at what some other kind of high tax states that you might think of, you might be surprised to see that Los Angeles ranks 44th in the nation with a property tax comparable of $14,000. If you look at our neighboring states, we used to rank, Iowa used to rank higher than us. In recent years, they've made moves to reduce their high property taxes, and they now rank below Minnesota on the property tax burdens. If you look at, for example, Fargo, North Dakota, South Dakota is the areas that we rank much, much higher than those neighboring states. If you look at a comparable property, in Fargo, they would pay about $13,600 in property taxes compared to Minneapolis. That would be at $39,000. If you look at rural Minnesota, those properties in rural cities, it's much, much greater property tax burden. Minnesota would be about a $45,000 property tax burden. In North Dakota, it would be $12,550. South Dakota, $20,000. Iowa, $33,000, and Wisconsin, about $27,000. So I just wanted to put those in kind of perspective to give you an idea of what we're talking about. The other thing I did want to mention as well has been brought up is this is a regressive tax. I know that's a concern for people when they're looking at our property or our overall tax burden. Business taxes are regressive. Ultimately, they're passed along to consumers in higher prices, less wages for employees, as well as reducing the cost of capital, making it less attractive for investors in the state. If you look at the Department of Revenue's tax incidence study, they do say that a cut in business taxes is more likely to benefit labor and consumers. The long-range change in business tax would tend to fall less on non-residents, less on Minnesota's owner of capital, more on Minnesota consumers, and more on Minnesota labor. So I just want to put that on the record as well. When you're looking at the various bills before you, our number one priority is really to eliminate that tax inflator. We do not believe tax increases should be on autopilot. We think if you're going to have tax increases, those should be voted on and debated in, by the legislature. So that would be our number one priority, as well as when we're looking to improve our competitiveness, the number one thing we have to do is stop growing this tax. And reducing that inflator is a key part of that. The other part, we do appreciate the ability and as resources allow to reduce that overall state levy. We think that is a very straightforward approach to be able to reduce this high fixed cost of doing business. I would also mention that we do have, what we discussed, is we do have concerns when you're looking at the exemption level. If that gets too high, we do believe you're treating, frankly, some small businesses different than other small businesses. There are a lot of small businesses that are tenants in larger properties. And so we want to make sure when we're looking at an overall package that we're providing tax relief as evenly as we can to small, medium, and large-sized businesses that are tenants as well as standalone buildings. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to one of our great Minnesota Chamber members.
And thank you, Ms. Skidoon. And Representative Nelson has a question for you, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Kadoon quoted this handout she passed out, and as I was looking at this earlier, and I got a little concerned here when I said it's a fact, and I'd like to know where the information comes from. The number two, if for rural properties and taxes in the nation, is that from all of Minnesota rural, or is that a specific city, a specific tax? Where does this come from? We hear get stuff handed out and said it's a fact. We hear all sorts about alternate facts in nowadays, and I was wondering where this is coming from because I get a little concerned and leery of somebody passing saying, "Now it's a fact," from whatever side. So, where does these come from? Is this one city? Is this multiple cities? Is this all a rule, conglomerate or put together? That's my question,
Ms. Kadoon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, it is sourced on this document. I appreciate you want to know where the sources are. This is from the 50-state comparison study that I referenced from the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. That's done in conjunction with the Lincoln Institute. So very well recognized as a national, as a great resource on really studying various property tax burdens across the whole nation. They do a very, very thorough job. It also looks at homeowners' apartments. If you want to look at see how those compares, it compares different types of properties because property taxes will vary if you're industrial property versus commercial, if you're in a large city versus rural. And what they did is they, this actually is looking at Glencoe, Minnesota, is who they looked at. And what they tried to find in each city is find really kind of the average property tax, a well-represented city that would be more average for the state. And so Glencoe is what they looked at. I'm sure the center would be happy to come in and explain their study, but it is very well recognized nationally as a very good study that shows truly how these compare across states.
Thank you, Ms. Kadoon. And seeing no other questions, Mr. Rupp? I'm sorry, Mr. Nelson.
Just follow up. And I just find it interesting that we're always talking about we're one of the highest tax states in the nation, and yet, as Representative McDonald said earlier, we're always usually in the top of business climate in the nation. We're in the top 10 in business climate, and yet we always hear that it's our taxes that are driving us down and driving businesses away. So it's kind of like you're saying this, but we're still number in the top 10 in business climate. So it's well, as you go forward, we need to look at this. We want reducing taxes for businesses is just as important as reducing taxes for homeowners. And you know, it's a fixed cost, but the senior citizen that's surviving on Social Security, their taxes go up every year also, and they're at that same bind. And if I had my druthers, that's where I would be putting our emphasis in reducing our individual taxpayers' burden and making sure that they can stay in their homes and not have to sell to get out because they can't afford to live there any longer.
Thank you. Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I'll just mention for business climate, we certainly agree that business climate is made up of many factors, and we've always said that. It's made up of you need to have a good, strong infrastructure, a great workforce, where Minnesota typically ranks amongst the best in the nation, is on workforce and highly educated. But also the cost of doing business is an important factor as well as the business climate. And that's where we unfortunately rank amongst the highest burdens in the nation. And so when you're looking to how you can make sure that your economy is strong and best positioned for a strong economic future, we think you have to reduce, look at those areas of our strengths and continue to improve on those, but also look at areas where we do not rank as high. And it's on the cost, the tax burden, that we do not rank as high, and we consider, continue to hear that is a detriment to our ability to grow, our companies to grow and invest in the state.
Thank you. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have more of a comment and possibly a question, but there is a study out there that also ranks the states on innovation, and I don't recall the name of the study, but I know that Minnesota moved from number 47 to 48, and that has to do particularly with new business startups. So when I look at the state of Minnesota and what we're trying to accomplish, we need to make sure that we remain or move that number up, because that's going to be the engine that drives our growth in the future. So I would just ask that committee members, and if you have comments, I would love to hear that, on how important that is to that kind of innovation. And that's where I have some concerns, that some of those rankings don't take that into account, and that's a very important part of being able to start a new business, grow a new business, and so forth. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chair Daskowski. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know where we heard that we were in the top 10 in business climate, but the numbers I've seen consistently have been 45, 46, and 49 out of 50. So I think we're struggling as a state in business climate very dramatically. And the removal of this oppressive tax will help us hopefully get out of the bottom 10 and into the next tier somewhere, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
In reference to that, Representative McDonald quoted when he gave his presentation that on the radio driving in today, that he heard on the radio that we were in the top 10. I think he later said it's number 7. So that's who I'm quoting, is Representative McDonald in his testimony from today.
Representative Draskowski. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I trust the three studies I saw over the radio.
Thank you.
He didn't say represent.
Any other questions? Okay. We'll move on to Ms. Rupp.
Thank you for having me here today. My name is Stephanie Lytle Rupp. I'm the president of Commonwealth Properties. We are based here in St. Paul. For the last 40 years, we have been saving old buildings, in a nutshell, beautiful historic properties. We put whatever that building needs to have in it to make it economically vibrant again, make it work. You probably aren't familiar with our buildings, but you may be familiar with the small businesses we start to put into those buildings. W.A. Frost, Hotel 340, St. Paul Athletic Club, the Commodore Bar and Grill. We own 11 buildings, operate 7 small businesses within those buildings, and employ about 350 employees over those. And we pay $700,000 in tax. 30% of that goes to the state. I have 2 very brief stories today about a couple of our buildings and the property taxes. Commonwealth bought the Dakota building, which houses W.A. Frost, in 1974. The building had squatters living in the top 2 floors, pulling the woodwork off the walls to burn in the fireplace, and rats, an infestation of more rats than you can possibly imagine, had taken over the bottom 2 floors. Please don't let that stop you from eating at W.A. Frost. It's better now. People had given up on the building and, frankly, given up on the neighborhood. Now, I know if you go to the corner of Selby and Western today, you see a very vibrant part of our city, one that we absolutely brag about when we're trying to get events like Crashed Ice to come to our state. But back then, that corner was the home of prostitution, drug deals, and gangs. Now, I will say that John Rupp thought long and hard, the founder of our company, and full disclosure, my husband, looked beyond all of that crime and saw beautiful houses, beautiful buildings, and a neighborhood that could be amazing again if someone took a chance, if someone stood up to the crime, if someone figured out how to make this work, someone stood up to make a difference. And against all advice, he decided to do this. People thought he was nuts for buying this building. And I will admit that by today's standards, that building was relatively cheap, but it was incredibly expensive for the risks associated with it. Now, in the first 10 years, a lot of work went into making it work. It didn't work, frankly, for the first 10 years. It was brutal, turning this neighborhood around, getting people on board with this. But for the last 30 years, the Dakota building hasn't changed much. It still houses commercial tenants on the upper two floors, and W.A. Frost still resides on the first two floors. In fact, the neighborhood hasn't changed much in the last 10 to 15 years, but you would never know that by the property taxes we pay. Every year, our taxes go up. And frankly, every year, our net worth decreases. Now, I know you don't really think about property tax and net worth, but they do go hand in hand, and let me explain to it. Very simple. If a building earns $100 and you want to sell it, you can generally, in today's market, get 10 to 15 times that amount. So if a building earns $100, I can sell it for $1,000 or $1,500. If my property tax increases by $5, now my building makes $95. So I can sell it for between $950 and $1,425. Now, this difference of $50 or $75 doesn't seem like much, but this is a mythical $50 or $75. Now add a very real 3 to 4 zeros after that, and tell me why I wouldn't be annoyed when part of the reason my property taxes increase every year is autopilot. The auto inflator is a problem. I, above all, want my elected officials to think about it when they increase my taxes. Please do me the courtesy. I pay $700,000 in tax every year to think about it before you increase them. The auto inflator should be eliminated. Another building I'd like to switch to is the University Club. In 1984, the member-owned University Club, at the time was member-owned, was going bankrupt, and they asked John Rupp to purchase it. They were quite sure that if the University Club went away, that some rich guy would buy it and use it as his house, and they were probably right. So John bought it, kept it as a University Club, and I will say it has been a struggle every year. The recession just about killed us. And we're just now coming out of it. We play a very important role in the community. We are a place that the neighborhood comes to gather. It doesn't matter what your religious preference is. It doesn't matter who you voted for in the last election. This is a place that the neighborhood comes to talk to each other, to learn from each other, to connect with each other on a very human-to-human level. And we feel an obligation to our 2,000 members, our 150 employees, and our community to stay open, to continue to serve that purpose. Last year, our EBITDA, basically the amount of cash flow we have to pay debt service or dividends or reinvest in the company, was $100,000. You might think, wow, that's kind of a lot of money, and you'd be right, except our debt service was $140,000. So paying the principal and interest on our mortgage was $140,000. To add insult to injury, in 2017, my taxes are going up $10,000. An 18% increase. Now, I understand that's not all the state. I do understand that. But believe me when I tell you, I have to pay that tax whether I'm profitable or not. That has to come from somewhere. And it comes from our ability to save other buildings, to hire new employees, to reinvest. I would love to get a new energy efficient boiler. I'm going to have to get one very soon. I would love to hire that other membership director I have my eye on. But I can't do any of that because I've got a huge tax bill. Got 11 other stories for each one of our buildings. My time is up. I won't tell you any more, I promise. But let me leave you with this. I'd love the auto inflator to be eliminated. I was very heartened by the bills presented today. And the state levy is far too great a fixed cost burden to our small businesses and should be reduced. Thank you very much for being here today. It was a great privilege.
Thank you, Ms. Rupp. Any questions from members? If not, we've got more people who would like to testify. Mr. Kadanok from NAIOP, and after that we've got
Jeff Van Weken, Brian Rice, Tina Hoy, and Jeff Forrester. So if both of you would like to queue up, be at the table, would help save some time. Go ahead, Mr. Cattanach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to address this group this morning. I do have a handout that I'd like to reference, if at all possible. As Mr. Chair mentioned, my name is Phil Cattanach, representing NAIOP, what is that, National Association of Industrial and Office Properties. My day job, I'm a developer with Opus, so we are intimately involved with the efforts of NAIOP as well as commercial property taxes. NAIOP Minnesota is a leading advocate for commercial real estate. We represent over 750 members for office, industrial, retail, and mixed-use properties. The handout that's going to be coming around, I think, highlights some of the impacts as it relates to property taxes, and there are references at the bottom of the handout as far as where the information comes from, and it is citing of the similar sources for the Center of Fiscal Excellence, as the previous speaker had mentioned in their testimony. So, you know, some high takeaways. Over the last 15 years, the automatic inflator has grown nearly $300 million. It's a 45% increase, and this is a factor that discourages businesses from investing, growing, or coming into our state. I understood earlier there were some comments about the business climate within Minnesota. I can say firsthand, when we as Opus are out working to bring a client or a potential user into the state of Minnesota, we hear a lot of the same themes. You have wonderful quality of living, great infrastructure, skilled labor force, but your taxes make it very difficult for us to understand and potentially go forward with this type of a commitment. Conversely, we also see a lot of organizations within the state that we have done business with that are looking to and grow and invest, and sometimes they're weighing, is that the right investment to stay here and grow in Minnesota, or could they look to maybe move their business elsewhere into a climate that ultimately allows them to grow more innovation as well as to put more dollars towards the growth of their business and less towards property taxes. There's a lot of great proposals that have been discussed here today, and we really appreciate, on behalf of our membership, the ideas of a lot of the authors of these bills. We strongly are supportive of Representative Peterson's bill to freeze the levy, and we strongly are endorsing of both Representative McDonald and Representative Draskowski's goal to phase out and ultimately eliminate the levy. I think one of the things that we wanted to kind of talk about in closing is as we continue to provide property tax relief and by eliminating or reducing the levy as well as freezing the inflator, what that allows us to do is tell a story as we continue to look at courting businesses to come into Minnesota or for businesses to grow here in Minnesota. I recently sat down with a manufacturer that's currently in Brooklyn Park, and they have two facilities, one in Wisconsin and one here in Minnesota. And they're looking to grow into their space. They want newer space. You know, the competitiveness right now to hire quality labor is very real. And the biggest piece that that owner who drove all the way in from Wisconsin to talk to me about was, Phil, we really want to continue to grow, and we really want to have a presence here in Minnesota. But right now, our profitability in Wisconsin is making it really, really hard for us to probably make this next step. So while he hasn't said no, I thought that's a pretty tangible example that I guess I wanted to just share with Mr. Chair and this committee today, that this is having a tangible impact in our community, and I do think it's important as we look at meaningful property tax relief that end users ultimately that are going to benefit from this are not going to be the large corporations. I think we had some discussion earlier about, you know, the large corporations getting the relief. I think it's a lot of the businesses that are tenants in a lot of the buildings that you see throughout the metropolitan and throughout the state area that are all going to receive a direct impact by having the property tax relief.
Thank you, Mr. Cattanach. Any questions from members? Seeing none, I'll ask Mr. Van Weken and Brian Rice to queue up to the testifying table. Thank you.
We'll start with Mr. Van Wyken.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Van Wyken. I'm a fiscal policy fellow with the North Star Policy Institute. This morning I would like to discuss some of our research into property taxes generally and to state business property tax in particular. Right now, the first chart on the document being distributed to you describes growth in homestead and business property taxes, including both local taxes and the state general levy, since 2002. That was the year that the state property taxes were imposed. It also shows the combined rate of growth in population and inflation as measured by the state and local implicit price deflator. Since 2002, total property taxes paid by homeowners have increased by 105% compared to 69% for businesses, despite the fact that business taxable value has increased much more rapidly than that of homesteads. The lower rate of growth in business property taxes is largely the result of the state general levy. Over time, state and local government spending has been pushed upward not only by inflation, but by population growth and demographic factors, such as the aging of the state's population. In addition, local levies have been pushed upwards by reductions in state aid. With the exception of inflation, the state general levy is insulated from all of the forces that have been pushing local levies upward, contributing to a lower rate of growth in business property taxes. You could argue that the existence of a state tax guaranteed to never grow faster than the rate of inflation has turned out to be a pretty good deal for Minnesota businesses. The next graph looks at the estimated distribution of tax relief for commercial and industrial property taxes if the state levy were eliminated by the value of those properties. For example, CI properties with taxable values under $500,000 comprise 75% of all CI properties in the state and will receive 14% of the total statewide CI tax relief resulting from the elimination of the state business property tax. Meanwhile, the 1% of CI properties with values in excess of $8.7 million will receive just over 30% of the total relief. The first charts on the second page show the distribution of tax relief resulting from the elimination of the state business property tax divided between Hennepin County, the rest of the seven-county metro in greater Minnesota, with each region receiving approximately one-third of the total relief. The second chart on the second page shows the estimated final incidence of the tax based on information from the Minnesota Tax Incidence Study, taking into account shifting and also the federal deductibility of property taxes. We found that just over half of the tax relief will be exported outside of Minnesota, and a little less than half will stay within Minnesota. The final graph is a little bit redundant of information that Mr. Cummings presented to you earlier. I would simply note that based on data for fiscal 2021, the full elimination of the state business property tax will exceed the projected surplus by about $260 million. That's the structural surplus. And just to remind the committee, the Council of Economic Advisors recommends that we more fully take inflation into account on the expenditure side of the forecast when we do our projections. That projected surplus doesn't include any inflation and any of the cost of current services. It does take into account some of the inflation, but most of it is not taken into account. If we were to take into account that inflation, it's possible that we might not have a structural surplus. We could have a structural deficit. And with that, Mr. Chair, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Van Wyken. Questions from members? Seeing none, Mr. Rice, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Rice. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis, and I'm here today on behalf of AFSCME Council 5. AFSCME Council 5 is a union of 43,000 state and local government workers who have a very big interest in tax fairness and economic prosperity for all Minnesotans. Today before you, Chair Drazkowski's committee, is the state general property tax. It was enacted in 2001, and it's a very significant tax. It's the fourth largest tax that the state collects when you do it on an individual basis. So you get $24 million projected in income tax in the upcoming biennium. When 11.5 in sales tax, approximately $2.5 billion in corporate tax, and then the state general sales tax is going to be $1.7 billion. So it's a pretty important part of the overall revenue mix that you need to look at. It's about 4% of all the tax that you'll collect to fund state government operations. And it, in a way, it is tied to education. The state is projected to spend $17.4 billion in education next year, and this tax is going to raise about 10% of that amount, $1.74 billion. I think Representative Erickson started the session talking about maybe some of the history of this. This was enacted in 2001, and at the time it was not only a bipartisan solution, it was a tripartisan solution. It actually, Ron Abrams was the tax chair in the House, and the business community had been lobbying for a long time. It was a major tax reform year. The economy was booming. It just so happened that spring we hit the peak of the market in about March of 2001, but we didn't know that the crash was coming. But the state had a plethora of money. There were boatloads of excess revenue. The business community had been talking about how high its business rates had been. So they came up with this statewide general sales tax, and they relieved, they compressed the rates. They put in the implicit price deflator that you can see in House File 484, that's Representative Peterson's bill, that actually has been inflated this tax at a rate less than other property taxes, as Mr. Van Wyckum points out. And it was a deal that was made, and it was not only the House Republicans that pushed it, it was Governor Ventura, and in fact it was done over Senator Pogemiller's objection. At the time, he thought that they were giving away too much. So the implication that this was some kind of like a DFL thing, it was viewed as good policy at the time. And it does provide a pretty important base on your general fund revenues. So you're getting a lot of money from this tax. And what's good about it is it's stable, it's growing, but it isn't growing anywhere near. Look at the projections on income. The income tax is going up a lot next year. So is sales. This tax is not compared to the other ones. So we think it's an important part of the mix. I know there are criticisms of it. Of all the bills that have been heard, I'm not here to testify for Representative Hertas's bill, but I think of all the approaches that have been made, his is probably the most measured on how to look at this tax and where to target it. I think I'm looking at the Democratic representatives from Hennepin County, and you should probably be for this bill. If you look at where the money is going, because Hennepin County is getting a third of this money, so Representative Nelson, Representative Carlson, Representative Joachim, Representative Loeffler, if you were looking at this on just a strictly localized basis, Hennepin County does exceptionally well in this bill, but that's not who I'm here for today. I think as far as AFSCME is concerned, it is a tax that has served some good. It's been part of the state overall tax mix for over 15 years now. There are some good parts about it, like any tax, some bad parts. I think if you look at the alternative to undo it, as Representative Marquardt said, do you undo the seasonal rec part of the deal? And do they, are you going to then start subjecting those people to the tax for school district levies and things like that? So, like a lot of taxes, you could single them out and point out how bad they are, but we'd urge the committee to take a big picture view of how this tax works and whether it should be repealed or changed anyway. That I'd conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. And Mr. Rice, I think you made reference twice to the state general sales tax. I think you meant the
I meant the property tax.
All right.
Thank you.
Any questions from members? Seeing none, is Ms. Tina Hoy here? Okay, if you would come up, and Kevin Lewis, perhaps. Who would like to go first?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Kevin Lewis. I'm the executive director of BOMA, which is the Building Owners and Managers Association. I was going to be the pinch hitter for Tina. She had an appointment with some of her clients, but she came in at the very end. So BOMA, we have members, our members are in the Twin Cities area, but there's a BOMA Minnesota coalition throughout the state of Minnesota, Duluth, Mankato, et cetera. And so as you hear some of the conversation today, do know that certainly we represent the commercial office buildings in all different sizes and all different municipalities across the state of Minnesota. But you also have heard some folks talk about restaurants and other office buildings and other types of buildings that are subject to the commercial industrial property tax. But rather than hear me speak on it, I'd really like to turn it over to Tina, who is a tenant representing one of those small businesses that actually pay the statewide CI property tax. But I would note, Representative Druskowski, that I had an omelet at the Sunrise Cafe just on Sunday morning, so I know exactly what restaurant you're talking about up in Malmo.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Ms. Hoy.
Great. Thank you, Chair Druskowski and all the committee members. So, as you said, my name is Tina Hoy. I'm a small business owner here in the Twin Cities. My firm has 10 people, and we occupy approximately 3,000 square feet downtown Minneapolis in the historic Young Quinlan Building. I don't know if many of you know it, but it's a great building. I'm here actually wearing two hats. So one as the small business owner, as Kevin said, that actually pays the property taxes through my agreement with the landlord. And secondly, my actual business provides real estate consulting services to lots of other businesses in the Twin Cities, both small nonprofits, small law firms, big law firms, Fortune 100, whole mix of things, but all of whom pay this commercial industrial property tax. So, as many of you may know, but maybe not everyone, commercial property taxes in the Twin Cities are typically, not absolutely, but typically paid by the occupant of the building. So, if you're a tenant in a small building like mine, if you're a tenant in the IDS Center, if you're a tenant downtown St. Paul, the cost of the property taxes gets passed through to you on top of your rent, on top of your operating costs. So when the taxes go up, you pay them. That's not something that the landlord has to absorb unless they have vacant space. So in my case, when I looked at the property tax bill, the landlord shared with me some history on that. We pay 25% of our tax bill is the state general fund tax. That's more than we pay to the city of Minneapolis. It's more than we pay to Hennepin County. And the only thing that it's less than is the fiscal disparities portion of the property tax. So it's a big piece of what we pay. And looking back, in 2006, that portion of the bill for the building was $96,000. For 17, it's projected at $158,000. So that's like a 70% increase in 11 years. So it's a big number. Now, my firm's small, 3,000 square feet. We just pay a small piece of that. But that's the story for everyone, this 70% increase. I mean, that's pretty typical for downtown Minneapolis. I looked at some other buildings. The 25% number is very typical here in St. Paul and in Minneapolis. So the concerns I have specifically about this tax is the automatic inflation. I think this legislature has been careful with other things not to allow things just to have an automatic inflator in it. This is the only thing I'm aware of that does that. When you get your property tax statement, typically, you have an option to go to a hearing about the property tax. So there's a date and time listed for your school district, for your city tax, for your county tax. Clearly states on the state general fund, no meeting required. You know, so it's something that people don't even have any input into. And the third concern I have about it is 95% of it falls on commercial industrial tax. So it's people that don't vote. It's an easy place to park some money, but it's, you know, something we have no say over. So I know there's been lots of proposals for making some modifications to this, and I appreciate that you're taking a hard look at it. Clearly, we'd love to see it removed in its entirety. If that's not manageable over a several-year time period, certainly eliminating the inflator would be a great first step, and we'd love to see that happen. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Hoy. And I think I heard you say that liquidity in a small business is really important, and when things turn down, you need to have some cash on hand to survive those times. Any questions from members? Seeing none, then we have one more testifier on the list, Mr. Forrester. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and association for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forster, and I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates. We used to be Minnesota Seasonal Recreational Property Owners, so that's the cabin group that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
We have over 180 lake association and thousands of individual members spread all across the state, and they support reform of the state general tax, state general business tax on Minnesota's cabin-owning families. We just conducted a survey of our members, and we found that the average annual household income for a cabin-owning family in Minnesota is about $58,000 a year. The average age is 68 years old. So maybe some of the people that you're talking about living down the street also have a cabin just outside of town. They are committed to Minnesota. They spend their vacation dollars here with an average length of ownership of 34 years, which is one of the highest in the country. By and large, these family cabins and hunting shacks are heirlooms, not assets. And it's important to note that this tax applies to property even if it doesn't have a cabin on it. So if somebody's got hunting land, it's applying. Since 2001, this group has been singled out for a special tax that is not based on their use, ability to pay, or connection to commercial and industrial property. There was no policy driving the creation of the statewide business property tax, no connection between a user group and a tax to fund that activity, no behavioral change being sought. In terms of the school levy, your memory is correct. The seasonal recreational pays all school taxes except for the excess operating referendum. So it's just that portion that they were removed from. And back in the day, in the 90s, there's a number of taxing districts in Minnesota where seasonal recreational property makes up more than 50% of the tax base. There were literally ads being taken out in local papers saying, vote for this tax, we don't have to pay it. And that was a problem of fairness that was partially addressed by this when we were removed from those referendum. We're greatly encouraged to see so many bills come forth to reform the state general tax. Thank you for your work to make the property tax code more fair, transparent, and affordable. We strongly support your efforts to reform the statewide business property tax on cabins and hunting shacks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Forrester. Members, any questions for Mr. Forrester? Seeing none, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to come down and make a comment? Thank you, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Mark Haven. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. Our 50-state property tax study has been that we co-authored with the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy has been referenced several times this morning, and I just will offer either here or online or in consultation with any of you an opportunity to discuss any methodological questions that you may have about that study. My purpose in coming up here today is just to offer one perspective from a policy perspective on the inflator issue. There's been a lot of discussion about past history and how this state general tax came to be. If you talk to the actual authors of this idea or the constructors of this idea, specifically former Commissioner Matt Smith, who was part of the architect of the big plan, he will tell you that one of the ideas behind the creation of the state general tax was to take the concept of tax competitiveness out of the system of local property taxation and make it a state issue. And so the idea was to, in creating the state levy, is to be able to use that as the governor by which property tax competitiveness in the state could be adjusted or altered. Now, of course, with an automatic inflator, we don't have that. It goes up all the time. And so I think from a just policy perspective, I think it's important to remember where this idea came from and what it was intended to do. And I would suggest that removing the inflator and putting that levy decision back in your hands
so that you can accommodate both the needs of government as well as the competitiveness issue of business together in making that decision is a smart thing to do.
Thank you, sir. Members, questions? Seeing none, anybody else in the audience that would like to talk about the state general levy today? Seeing none, we've got 5 minutes left, and we're adjourned early. Meeting is adjourned.